Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, 8:35 on this beautiful Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. Just a quick personal note. My brother Steve and his wife, their family foundation, they put on this charitable event which benefits Angel Flight Central. And if you're not familiar with Angel Flight Central, they provide flights, they're private pilots from throughout the country, but here in the Midwest is where Steve is part of this, that for healthcare emergencies or humanitarian reasons, they provide flights to, organ donation, that kind of emergency surgeries, those kinds of things. Well, they're putting on their Wings and Wedges golf event out at, of course, it would be at Prairie Landing Golf Club, which is out by the DuPage Airport. And that's coming up on Friday, September 23rd. And if you'd like to participate or sponsor or get any more information about this event, it's a valuable service, you can go to www.angelflightcentral.org. That's angelflightcentral, one word, .org. And your help would be greatly appreciated. Well, joining me now on the phone is William Daley, the former White House Chief of Staff, former U.S. Commerce Secretary, and as I pointed out, too, a supporter of the Independent Map Amendment. Bill, thank you very much for getting up with me this morning.
Sure, Rick. Nice to join you and your listeners.
I know at the end of June you had expressed some concern about Bernie Sanders and the fact that the Vermont senator was not moving actively to endorse Hillary Clinton. And now it seems like, well, we've had the platform committee meetings in Orlando. It sounds like on Tuesday that the two of them will be together and there will be a formal endorsement. But yet there were some pretty significant concessions made by Hillary Clinton during the platform committee. But does the stuff that goes on in the platform committee really matter?
Well, yeah, the truth historically, platforms aren't really the nucleus of a campaign in a general election, or neither are they the sort of the blueprint of governing necessarily. They are an expression of the party's position. And, you know, we've ended the primary process, which is a party function. I know Bernie Sanders did quite well. You know, you get big crowds and a lot of enthusiasm and for his genuineness in many of his positions. He did, though, come in second. He did lose by almost 4 million votes, and Hillary Clinton won rather comfortably in the states that mean and are extremely important come the general election. So I have felt that, that as then-Senator Clinton, when Barack Obama beat her in the primaries and they ended in the first week of June, she immediately endorsed them, had no conditions as far as party reform or positions of policy, and basically supported him 1,000% and encouraged her supporters, and as proven in the general election, then the vast, vast, vast majority of those who supported Hillary Clinton moved over and supported Barack Obama. I think this last month or so of sort of Sanders negotiating, demanding, not yet endorsing, we're only 10 days or 2 weeks away from the convention, and waiting till then, from a senator who did generate a lot of excitement, but never been a Democrat, never run as a Democrat. He's run as a socialist, which is fine, and Socialist Party has a long history in parts of the world and in the United States, but not one that's risen to the national level. And as proven by his deciding to run as a Democrat, not a socialist, was it going to become a meaningful party and express meaningful change. So I'm happy to see he's on his way to hopefully endorsing. I hope it will be an unqualified, enthusiastic endorsement and telling his supporters they owe it to the country to get behind her because of the seriousness of this election when you have her versus Donald Trump.
Well, you also pointed out, and as you said, it's a primaries are a party function. It's not a general election function.
Right. And each state determines that, as you know, Rick. They determine the rules under which the party apparatus. It's not a national primary, so if one state wants to have a caucus or an open primary like we have in Illinois where you can just show up on Election Day and say, I'm a Democrat, other states like New York, you have to register as a Democrat before a couple of weeks before the election. That's totally appropriate. But to somehow imply that one's good, one's evil, and we ought to have one dictated by Washington rule for states, is not the way the system works.
Well, you've also defended the issue of superdelegates, which, of course, is something that Sanders first assailed, then said, well, I'm going to try to woo the superdelegates over to me.
Yeah, superdelegates. Look at the Republican Party right now, I assume, wish they had a lot more superdelegates. Who are people who are year-round active in the party or run for office, and by virtue of their being a congressperson or a senator or a House member or a senator or governor or DNC, they spend a lot of time on behalf of the Democratic Party and issues fighting for them. And this is not exactly like they're getting some, you know, winning the Powerball. They get the chance to go to a convention without having to run as a slated delegate. Because they don't have to decide before the elections in their states or until the very end, but that's their choice because they're party leaders and they bring a certain judgment that balances an emotional movement that may be going on, or like you have in the Republican Party, somebody who gets 30% basically in the vast majority of primaries and ends up because it's a 12 or 13 person field as their nominee. And there's a serious question. Does he really represent the Republican Party, whatever that is? And as I say, I think it's totally appropriate that those people who year in and year out give to the party should have the opportunity to be there because they're leaders of the party. And I don't think there's anything evil about it. They can decide to endorse Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or whoever when they want. It may be that the vast majority of those superdelegates who are members of the House and Senate who have worked with Bernie Sanders, very few, if any, of them wanted to endorse him. And that in and of itself is a commentary for those who worked with him most over the years.
You know, at the outset, we talked about the platform. There were a couple of things that Hillary Clinton acceded to from the request of Bernie Sanders supporters. But one was the fact of doing the Pacific trade deal. And, you know, there was a bit of an outcry that a proposal to urge Congress not to approve that trade pact, even though that's something that the Obama administration is actively pursuing. And Hillary Clinton supported it and then turned around and said she was against it.
Yeah, and I think that's a good example. I think for the party to have gone on record at Bernie Sanders' request to be against what the president has said is one of, in his opinion, the most important economic votes and agreements for the future of America would be a repudiation of the president. Now, there's differences in the Democratic Party as there is in the Republican Party around the issue of trade. But to reject the president would have been unprecedented for the Democratic Party to do. So I think the party was right not to in their platform, call on Congress to reject the president's one of his main economic agreements. But it's a debate, and it will continue, obviously, whoever wins, because both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have come out against this agreement. Trump a much broader way against trade and globalization, but the truth of the matter is so much of what is discussed around trade and job loss, which is legitimate, is a result of technology and globalization and the fact that much of the world now is opened to ideas and technology and travel, and that wasn't 30 years ago, and we've got to deal with it, and it's not easy. It's very difficult.
Well, obviously, you know, with your role in NAFTA and that kind of, and the issue of trade, and you know, frankly, you pretty much answer the question is, you know, what has really changed that has made trade so evil in the minds of average people?
What's happened, you've had, to a large degree, stagnant wages for years. you've had lots of companies take the Oreo cookie plant, you know, on the south side of Chicago that's moving 600 jobs to Mexico to make the same cookies they're making there, but a lot less wages. And so obviously the people affected by that see that as an unfair situation for them. Now, you know, that you can on the one hand say to the company, which I would, this is outrageous. You know, you've been here for umpteen years. There's got to be a way to make this work better. But it's because of the economic difficulty we've had over the last number of years and stagnant wages, especially for the middle class. Again, much of it, job changes by virtue of technology and jobs that were done by, whether it was a receptionist at an office, are now done by voicemail or iPhone or whatever new technologies that's out there to replace lots of jobs. And that's the dynamism of our economy. You can't just stop that. It's a tough issue. I do believe that there is no turning back on globalization, opening of the world. I think we have to be tougher on our trade. NAFTA, at the time, 25 years ago, in my opinion, was a good agreement and was something that I think President Clinton felt strongly was part of trying to bring the economy back, and it did come back. It was along with that a budget deal that had a tax increase that the Republicans fought. And then the economy ended up creating the business community, and the growth of the economy created 21 million new jobs in that period. So, again, 25 years ago, NAFTA, which lots of people point to as the evil agreement, I think it was no doubt there were job losses, but I think overall it was good for the economy at the time. But that's 25 years, and I think President Obama very much saw the difficulties in the trade agreement, and much of what he got in the Trans-Pacific Partnership was a result of looking at the last 25 years of trade agreements and saying we could do better. And on top of that, there is an important piece of our foreign policy in our allies in Asia, whether it's Korea, Japan, so many countries, Philippines, to have them understand that they should continue to look and deal with the United States, because so many of them have a question of whether we're going to continue vis-a-vis the growth of China and their economy to be an important part of the economy and relationships in Asia.
We're speaking with William Daley, former White House Chief of Staff and former U.S. Commerce Secretary. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Eight 49 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio at Tribune Tower, and I'm speaking on the phone to William Daley, former White House Chief of Staff and former U.S. Commerce Secretary. Bill, I wanted to ask you, just while we're on the subject of trade, what your thoughts might be on the whole issue of Brexit.
Well, look, I was shocked by the vote. I think it will have enormous ramifications politically for the U.S. potentially over the next number of years. Our European relationship, our relationship with England has been strong. Obviously, there's been peace in Europe since the European Union came about. And so I think it has a possibility, putting economics aside, of having a serious impact on the sort of U.S.-world relationship, depending on what happens going forward. I think economically it may be very difficult for England, but the devil's in the details of the actual agreement of Brexit, and that's yet to be negotiated, obviously.
The Trump people like to say, well, that's a reflection of kind of this new nationalism that's in the public's mind.
There's no question that there's a sense of nationalism or populism, whatever you want to call it, around the world, including in China and Russia and other places. That's not exactly always pretty and always a positive thing, because we are interconnected as a world. We should be very proud, and we are, of the U.S. and as Americans, what we do around the world in trying to help and alleviate poverty and keep security and protect our citizens and other parts of the world. So that may be true, But that's not all a positive thing. The nativism that's going on in many parts of the world, fueled by a lot of far-right, as you see in Europe, in different countries. Austria almost elected a far-right, the first one in Europe, president. They have to redo the election. So that may be the case, but it isn't exactly a positive thing all the way around.
Going back to where we kind of started this conversation, so we assume that Sanders will endorse Hillary Clinton on Tuesday, but does that bring those Sanders voters to Hillary Clinton?
Well, I sure hope Bernie Sanders, that's why, as I mentioned earlier, Rick, I hope he's unequivocal, because I had the opportunity, as you may remember, to chair Al Gore's campaign in 2000. Against George Bush.
Who can forget that?
Yeah, right. Who can forget the 5 months, 5 weeks? And many of my friends in the progressive, almost socialist, who believed in Ralph Nader, didn't think it would matter that Ralph Nader was running. And Ralph Nader was very much tougher on Al Gore and attacking Al Gore than he was George Bush during that period. And lo and behold, he got 97,000 votes in Florida. Al Gore lost Florida by 500 votes. George Bush was president of the United States. And if anyone thinks their vote didn't matter in that election, that fundamentally changed the world, that election, and the course of the U.S. After 2000, in many ways, our economy, our standing in the world, our position, the cost of the wars we've been in now for years. So I hope, that's why I cannot wait to hear his endorsement, and hopefully an unequivocal and encouragement. It's not up to Hillary Clinton to go and get the Sanders voters to be for her. Bernie Sanders has to participate in that, and he has to be out there saying, this is important. If you believe in what I believed in, you must be for Hillary Clinton and help her win and stop Donald Trump.
How damaging was the FBI and James Comey's findings?
Look, I think it was very damaging, no question about it. There was obviously she didn't, in the FBI's mind, commit a criminal offense that was recommended, therefore, to be prosecuted. But as she has acknowledged, she made a terrible mistake. It was stupid, and it just compounded itself. I think there, though, most people who believe that somehow that reflects on Hillary Clinton's character and her capacity to be president probably is already against her. I think the people in the middle, again, you have to look at the candidates on the ballot and say one of these is, the odds are one of the two and not the Libertarian is going to be president. So who am I going to be for? To take a pass and walk away? As I said, a lot of people in 2000 thought it didn't matter, and lo and behold, it mattered greatly.
Well, when we talk about Bernie Sanders supporters and how you're looking for that kind of emphatic push by him to go to Hillary, and then we just had a release of a poll, I can't remember who did it, which actually showed that the Libertarian candidate was slightly leading Donald Trump among younger voters.
Well, look, I think younger voters who are looking to the future, it's pretty hard to envision them leaning towards Donald Trump, because much of what he talks about is about recreating a world that I don't think the younger people would like to see, whether it's economically, whether it's militarily around the world, how we look at ourselves, how we view our fellow citizens, view people around the world. So I could see, obviously looking at the polling data, as you do, Rick, that Hillary Clinton's got a problem with younger people, and because people don't trust her. I've known her. I've worked with her. I think she's extremely competent. I think she is one of those candidates that has a difficult time campaigning versus governing. I think she'd be a very good president. And there's one thing that's pretty obvious this last week in our country. We need to lower the rhetoric, get working together again. I have the honor of working with the president and seeing we're a dysfunctional Congress, many people just saying, no, don't do anything with this president. I think Hillary Clinton, in her days as senator and even as First Lady and as Secretary of State, will aggressively work with Republicans if they're willing to work to solve some of these problems. Because we cannot keep this crazy politics going of hate and questioning everyone's motivations. And I may disagree with a lot of people on politics, but they're not evil. And we shouldn't demean people in this rhetoric that's out there. And quite frankly, Donald Trump fuels it in many ways, as do many populist nativists do. That's dangerous for our form of democracy. Extremely dangerous. And we're seeing much of that rhetoric, not just from him, but from lots of people on all sides, causing a tremendous tragedies around this country. And I think it's about time everybody just take a deep breath and stop and think before they talk.
There is some advice from Bill Daley, former White House Chief of Staff and former U.S. Commerce Secretary. Bill, thank you so much for getting up and joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Have a good day to you and your listeners. Thanks.
We'll be back with more right after this.